what this example tells us about how serious the talk about human rights conditionality. This is an example of a senator.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us. This is very interesting, goes way beyond this particular indictment. Also, Hisham Kassem, well-known journalist, co-founder of the Free Current Movement of liberal political parties in Egypt, just arrested, as well as are so many others imprisoned in Egypt right now. Lina Atala, publisher and editor of the Cairo, Egypt-based Matamasser, speaking to us from Cairo. And Bob Hennelly, award-winning reporter who's been covering Democratic Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey for decades. We'll link to his reports in Insider New Jersey and Insider NJ and Salon. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Listen to Black Book Talk at KBOO FM every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon. Co-hosts O.B. Hill, Patricia Welch, and Emma Jackson Ford discuss African-American authors and books. That's Black Book Talk every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon on KBOO FM.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we are in the middle of our fall membership drive. Help us meet our $55,000 goal by making a contribution today. KBOO's organic, free-range, and independent programming is only possible with your support. Give now at kboo.fm/give. You can also donate by texting the word KBOO to 44321 or by mailing a check to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Our members continue to fertilize community radio every time they give.
What is climate change? How is it affecting our lives? And what can we do about it? We'll connect the dots, from energy to extreme weather, public health, and more. I'm Dr. Anthony Leiserwitz. Join me for Climate Connections during the evening news, weekdays at 5 p.m. here on 90.7 KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
It's coming up on the fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. A non-binary Oregon teen wins their discrimination case against the Greater Albany School District. The man who hit and killed Portland activist Sean Kelleher in 2019 is sentenced to 17 years in prison. And in national news, a new round of free COVID tests are available for households to order today. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News from Monday, September 25th, 2023. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Reed Johnson. An Oregon non-binary teen has won their federal discrimination lawsuit against the Greater Albany School District and the former principal of Oak Grove Elementary School. A jury found that the district and the principal violated Title IX, which protects students against discrimination on the basis of sex or gender identity. Lior Onali Kelsey was 8 years old in third grade when other students started to bully them for being non-binary. Children called them degrading names and threatened to forcibly remove their clothes. The court found that the then principal, Jerry Matuzik, knew about the bullying but didn't investigate it or intervene. By fifth grade, Onali Kelsey transferred to online school and later out of the district. They're now 15, in high school in Corvallis. In a statement, Onali Kelsey said, quote, "I'm so glad there was justice. This lawsuit was me regaining my power that I did not have for a long time. I know I have that back now," end quote. The jury awarded approximately $317,000 in compensation. Greater Albany School District Superintendent Annie Gardner says the district has taken steps to improve the situation. He says they've created a new equity, diversity, and inclusion department and updated how the district responds to bias incidents. In October 2019, Sean Kelleher, a Portland anti-fascist activist, was struck and killed by an SUV. Now, nearly 4 years later, the driver has pled guilty to first-degree manslaughter. Christopher Kneipp was sentenced to 17 years in the plea deal. Kelleher was just 23 when he was killed. His mother, Laura Kelleher, told OPB, quote, "We as a family said we didn't really want a plea deal. We wanted it to go to trial. We wanted to go for murder because he did a three-point turn and drove up onto the sidewalk, but nope," end quote. The night of Kelleher's death, he had been out with friends at Cider Riot, while Kneipp was at a concert at the nearby Bossa Nova Ballroom. They passed each other on the street and had a verbal altercation. Shortly after, Kneipp got into his car and crashed into Kelleher before fleeing the scene. Kneipp wasn't arrested until June of 2022, and Kelleher's mother had long accused the Portland police of intentionally slowing the investigation into her son's death because of his political beliefs. Environmental activists and Democratic lawmakers are celebrating the Biden administration's creation of the American Climate Corps. It's a new jobs training program designed to mobilize tens of thousands of young people to tackle the impacts of climate change. Catherine Carley has more in Massachusetts.
A new federal jobs program aims to mobilize tens of thousands of young Americans to address the growing threats of climate change. The American Climate Corps is modeled after public works programs created during the Great Depression, with a new focus on building green energy and climate resilience. Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts calls it ambitious, just, and pro-union.
The tens of thousands of American Climate Corps members will not just help us save the world from climate threats, they will help us build a world worth saving.
President Joe Biden created the program through an executive order after the effort was thwarted by Republicans in Congress who questioned its cost. American Climate Corps members can sign up online for paid training opportunities in land and water restoration, energy efficiency technologies, and more. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York says the program is an important part of the Green New Deal, a legislative proposal backed by climate activists.
We are starting to turn the green dream into a green reality. You all are changing the world.
Ocasio-Cortez says the American Climate Corps will focus on equity and environmental justice, prioritizing communities that have been disproportionately affected by climate change. Lawmakers credited young environmental activists for pressuring the White House to create the jobs training program. College student John Paul Mejia with the Sunrise Movement thanked President Biden for listening.
Thousands of young people were out on the streets asking for more. You got young people's attention. You decide what you do with them.
They're now circulating a petition calling on the president to declare climate change a national emergency. And five states have also announced the creation of their own climate corps, bringing the total number of state-level programs to 10. For Commonwealth News Service, I'm Catherine Carley.
Neighborhood coalitions in Portland are raising concern over the city's transition to a new system of governance in 2025. This comes 2 weeks after the city released a proposed organizational chart of how Portland post-2025 would work. The chart prompted four district coalitions, representing a total of 57 neighborhood associations, to reach out to Mayor Wheeler and Portland's Chief Administrative Officer Michael Jordan, who will oversee the city's transition. In a letter sent on September 20th, the coalitions requested a 30-day hiatus on approving the city's organizational chart. The month pause would allow neighborhood associations to learn how the change might affect them. What's at stake is the Office of Community and Civic Life, which currently oversees neighborhood associations. Under the proposed chart, the office would be disbanded, and neighborhood associations would fall under the purview of the mayor's chief of staff. Members of the coalition say they're unclear of the implication of this move, who they would interact with, and how they would be funded. Neighborhood associations have long since been a powerful platform for the interests of Portland homeowners and wield a considerable amount of political clout. One expressed intention that a new expanded Portland government is to increase avenues for non-homeowners and other groups to have greater influence in City Hall. The public comment window for the new organizational chart is currently set to close at the end of September. The city has not responded to the coalition's joint letter. A group of patients with disabilities and doctors has filed motions to intervene in, and then asked to dismiss, a lawsuit challenging California's Medical Aid in Dying Law, the End of Life Option Act. There are 10 states, including Oregon, that allow doctors to prescribe medication to terminally ill adults to end their lives. Suzanne Potter has more.
California's Medical Aid in Dying Law is back in court. Three patients with disabilities and two doctors are asking to intervene in a lawsuit challenging the law, and they want the judge to dismiss the suit. In April, a coalition of disability rights groups and people with disabilities sued to stop the End of Life Option Act, claiming it is discriminatory and coerces people with disabilities into using medical aid in dying. Attorney Jess Peasley is with Compassion and Choices, which supports the bill.
It's not discriminatory to offer an additional end-of-life option. And there's a lot of safeguards built in the act to make sure that this law is not being used by people who do not want it. The only people who qualify for it are terminally ill with a prognosis of 6 months to live and who have the capacity to make the decision.
California is one of 10 states, plus Washington, D.C., that allow doctors to prescribe medication that would allow mentally capable, terminally ill adults to peacefully end their suffering if they choose to take it. Peter Sussman is a retired journalist from the Bay Area who says he lives with constant pain after a series of spinal surgeries. He supports medical aid in dying and has joined the motion to intervene in the lawsuit.
When my time comes, and I am certified by doctors to be dying within 6 months, I do not want to die suffering needlessly. The government shouldn't be able to tell me the manner of my own death.
The state of California, the defendant in the lawsuit, has also brought a motion to dismiss. Earlier this year, the same judge dismissed a different challenge to the suit brought by the Christian Medical and Dental Association after it reached a settlement with the state that said doctors who have a religious objection don't have to record a patient's request for medical aid in dying on their chart. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Starting today, September 25th, households can order 4 free COVID tests supplied by the federal government via covidtests.gov. They're intended to help people prepare for respiratory virus season. There's been an uptick in people testing positive for COVID in the past few months, but still a far lower level than in 2022 and 2021. The FDA approved newly updated COVID-19 vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna that should be hitting pharmacies this week. They're approved for people 6 months and older who haven't had a COVID vaccine in the past 2 months. The Health and Human Services Department says the tests can be used through the end of 2023 and that they will come with instructions on how to check if the expiration date on the test has been extended. Up to this point, some 775 million at-home tests have been distributed by the Postal Service. House Republicans deadlock over funding days before the government shuts down. A New Deal style jobs training program aims to ease the impacts of climate change, and Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas appeared at donor events for the right-wing Koch network. With more on the story, it's Catherine Carley with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Think about how stressful of a job that is on the best of days. And now we'd be asking them to show up to work with the added stress of not getting a paycheck.
Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg tells NBC that air traffic controllers would keep working, even if Congress fails to pass the short-term funding needed to avert a government shutdown. With less than a week, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy could probably get a bipartisan continuing resolution at current levels, but that would require Democratic votes, which might cost him his office. And Representative Tim Burchett of Tennessee tells CNN nearly a dozen fellow House Republicans would not support any resolution without deep spending cuts.
The way you get somebody off of heroin is not giving them more heroin. And the way you get people, this country, off these so-called continued resolutions is quit passing these dadgum continued resolutions.
Former President Trump has been urging Republicans towards a shutdown in the hope it would stop the funding of the federal prosecutions against him. Court watchers say that wouldn't work. The New York Times reports violent threats against law enforcement, judges, and elected officials have exploded since Trump was first indicted. Threats against FBI officials are up 300% since agents searched Trump's Florida home and agents' identities have been spread online. Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts is praising President Biden's new job training program for green energy and climate resilience work.
The tens of thousands of American Climate Corps members will not just help us save the world from climate threats, they will help us build a world worth saving.
The program is part of a Green New Deal backed by progressive Democrats. 10 states have also created their own state-level climate corps. Justice Elena Kagan says the Supreme Court needs an ethics code with public confidence at a 50-year low.
It would help in our own compliance with the rules, and it would, I think, go far in persuading other people that we were adhering to the highest standards of conduct.
Her comments follow new reporting from ProPublica that Justice Clarence Thomas attended at least two secret donor events for the conservative Koch network. The group has long sought to overturn the landmark 1984 case Chevron v. NRDC, which set a 40-year precedent on the power of federal agencies. The high court is expected to take it up in the next term. Democratic Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey faces growing calls to resign after he and his wife were indicted on federal bribery charges. Menendez has temporarily stepped down from the Foreign Relations Committee, but says he's going to stay in the Senate. Strikes against the big three Detroit automakers expanded over the weekend. President Biden will visit a picket line in Michigan tomorrow, perhaps the first such visit by a sitting president in a century. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $55,000 by the end of October. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, LTAR. Let's talk about race. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a bit of drizzle and an overnight low of 57 degrees. Tomorrow's weather, rainy with a high of 64. Today in history, in 1956, TAT-1, the first submarine transatlantic telephone cable system, began being used. It could carry 35 calls at once. The quote of the day is from American writer Shel Silverstein, who was born this day in 1930. He said, quote, "Tell me I'm clever. Tell me I'm kind. Tell me I'm talented. Tell me I'm cute. Tell me I'm sensitive, graceful, and wise. Tell me I'm perfect, but tell me the truth." It's the final day of the trial against Oregon ballot measure 114, the gun control measure. The court case is taking place in Harney County in the southeastern part of the state. 114 was passed by voters in November, but has been temporarily blocked by Judge Robert Ratio since then. The judge responded to a lawsuit from gun owners arguing the new law infringed on their right to bear arms in the Oregon Constitution. Measure 114 is also one of the first gun control laws passed after new Supreme Court guidance on how judges should evaluate challenges to them. Now judges are only supposed to consider whether the law is consistent with the country's, quote, historical tradition of firearm regulation, and not concern themselves with public interests like promoting safety. The Harney County case has been happening for the last 6 days. The measure was also challenged in federal court, but a judge ruled in July that the measure was lawful under the U.S. Constitution. That ruling has been appealed. Measure 114 would ban large-capacity magazines and require background checks and permits before a gun could be purchased. Hawaii Senator Mazie Hirono calls for Native voices to be heard in the wake of the Maui fires. With that story and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas from KMBA in Anchorage, Alaska, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. In the aftermath of the fires that ravaged Maui, the struggle to protect the Native Hawaiians' land continues. Matt Laszlo reports from Washington.
Here in the nation's capital, when people hear Maui, they think resorts, not Native Hawaiians. So they are among the very important voices.
That's Hawaii Democratic Senator Mizzi Hirono. Even before the tragic inferno, many Native Hawaiians were vocal critics of where their water was being diverted to. Tourism, sugar plantations. And there was also a housing state of emergency put in place by Hawaii Democratic Governor Josh Green, which he declared ahead of the fire, one that upended traditional reviews focused on the cultural and environmental impacts of development. Issues Senator Hirono knows all too well.
I think that is being challenged, but nonetheless,
yeah.
The sentiment is definitely there. They don't want developers swooping in and getting hold of the property and doing whatever it is they're going to do. There are also issues such as water. That's a limiting factor in terms of developing that area.
As the rebuilding of lives, homes, and land continues, Hawaii Democratic Senator Brian Schatz cautions patience.
I think we have to take a deep breath and allow FEMA and the EPA to clean up the site. And then we need to let individual landowners have access to their own property so they can get closure and collect whatever personal effects might still be there.
Yeah.
And then individual property owners are going to make individual decisions.
Schatz says public officials have no say in some of these deeply personal matters.
For some, they want to rebuild, and for others, they want to rebuild their lives somewhere else. And I'm not here to judge any individual family for what they may want to do.
As for Senator Hirono, she promises there's not going to be a free-for-all land grab in Lahaina.
Well, I do not have the answers, but what I do know is that there should not be a rush to figuring out what Lahaina is going to look like.
For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
A celebration of indigenous music and culture took place in Juneau, Alaska recently, packed with 3 days of music and 25 different acts. As KMBA's Rhonda McBride reports, organizers say it's the only global indigenous music festival in the United States.
It all takes place in Juneau, in Tlingit Ani, the Tlingit homeland. This is the second Ok Rock Music Festival, now held every 2 years. This year, it features 35 cultures from around the world. Some of the headliners are well known. Native American groups like Snotty Nose Rez Kids and Samantha Crane, a Choctaw indie pop singer. Stephen Kachung Blanchett, the creative director for the festival, says Ok Rock has performances on multiple stages as well as jam sessions.
We're not going to have seats like the traditional seats. We're going to have places where people can just chill out. You might be able to, you know, hang out on a piece of like sea otter fur and just kind of lay out and relax, or maybe even smudge with some sage.
Come on.
I'm imagining some organic, just amazing magic being made.
Ok Rock is co-sponsored by Tlingit and Haida Tribes and the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council. With help from KTOO's Boston Christopher in Juneau, I'm Rhonda McBride.
I'm Joel Freitas.
Hollywood screenwriters could see the end to their five-month-long strike. This comes after the Writers Guild of America, or WGA, reached an agreement with studio executives on Sunday, after 5 days of renewed negotiations. Screenwriters walked off the job on May 2nd to protest pay, staffing shortages, and the use of artificial intelligence in scriptwriting. These issues were made more extreme in recent years with the rise of streaming services, with new media giants like Disney and Amazon emerging and consolidating market shares. Until contract language is finalized, writers themselves will not know the details of the agreement. In an email to members, the WGA emphasized the deal was, quote, exceptional, with meaningful gains and protections for writers in every sector of the membership, end quote. The governing bodies of the two branches of the WGA will likely vote on the contract on Tuesday. While the agreement reached Sunday has not ended the strike, picketing has been suspended. The WGA encouraged its members to join the SAG-AFTRA picket line, which has been ongoing since July 14th. It was the first time since 1960 that the screenwriters and actors' unions had been on strike together. While the WGA have traditionally gone on strike more often than any other industry union, the current strike is the longest since 1988, and currently 5 days shy of the longest in the guild's history. Alabama is seeing a significant drop in the number of young people in detention, but their advocates are urging the state to consider more alternatives to juvenile incarceration. Despite a 60% decline in the past decade, concerns remain about potential longer-term consequences and the need for programs that focus on rehabilitation. Shantia Hudson reports.
The number of children locked behind bars in Alabama has declined, but their advocates say more needs to be done to create alternatives to incarceration. The one-day count of detained youth in 2021 was nearly 25,000 nationwide. That's a 60% decrease over the past decade, according to the U.S. Department of Justice. While the trend is positive, Josh Rovner with the Sentencing Project cautions against expecting it to continue. He says at least a part of the decrease was because of the pandemic.
You think about the things that kids get arrested for. It's often school-based referrals, and if virtual school is happening, then kids aren't going to be referred by their school resource officers. They're not going to be shoplifting if all the stores are closed. They're not going to be getting into fights if they're all staying at home.
In Alabama, a one-day count of young people behind bars in 2019 saw almost 800 detained. By 2021, that number had dropped to 678. Data from the Annie E. Casey Foundation says young people released from correctional confinement have high rates of rearrest and new convictions. Research has shown that kids who are incarcerated often experience significant long-term consequences. Rovner says these persist into adulthood.
Whether it is one child who is locked up or 10,000 or 100,000, it's important to realize just how toxic these facilities are for kids. They have much worse outcomes, not only on their education and career achievements, but also much more likely to reoffend.
Recognizing these adverse effects, experts and activists are asking for a more compassionate approach to juvenile justice. Reforms that focus on rehabilitation and community-based support systems have proven to be more effective in addressing the underlying issues than locking kids up. For Alabama News Service, this is Shantia Hudson.
Portland's Artist Repertory Theater will cancel their 2023-2024 season just as rehearsals were scheduled to begin. In a statement, the theater referenced a, quote, ongoing national crisis among regional theaters. They were hoping for funding assistance from the state, but that didn't materialize. House Bill 2459 would have awarded $250,000 in recovery money to the Repertory Theater, but legislators didn't pass it. That lack of funds, plus declining ticket sales, increasing operational costs, and reduced staffing capacity led to the decision to pause the upcoming season. The decision comes as the theater is spending $30 million on constructing their new building, but managing director Ayanna Cunningham said those funds are strictly for the building project. Wind farms are doing more than just creating clean energy. In Iowa, they're generating significant tax revenue for local counties, too. Dr. Anthony Leiswitz has more in the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leiswitz, and this is Climate Connections. In many parts of Iowa, wind turbines can be seen spinning above farm fields. These wind farms generate significant tax revenue for the counties where they're located. Alex Delworth of the nonprofit Center for Rural Affairs is author of a recent report on the impact of wind tax revenue in three Iowa counties, Story, Ida, and Marshall. He says the counties had various strategies for collecting and dispersing the funds, but all saw big economic benefits.
Overall, wind tax revenue has allowed counties to increase funding to a number of essential services, you know, make pretty high investment infrastructure improvements and pay for like specific special projects without raising the tax burden on local community members.
For example, Ida County has financed about $30 million worth of road and highway improvements. Meanwhile, the wind turbines in Marshall County have increased the tax base.
Without the turbines, the property tax in their county would have increased by 22% to cover the same amount of services.
So Iowa's booming wind energy industry generates a lot more than clean energy. The report shows it can also help support education, health, and infrastructure in rural counties. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Monday, September 25th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our producer and engineer for tonight's newscast is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Jill Freitas, Catherine Carley, Suzanne Potter, Shantia Hudson, and our climate consigliere, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our lovely members. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a great time to join. If you would like to become a member and support our program, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Making Contact.
Making contact.
I'm standing inside the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland, which is this beautiful historic cinema. There's a big marquee outside, the kind where you change the letters by hand. And I'm here to see...
Hi, can I get one for Oppenheimer, please?
Yeah, sure. Okay, Theater 2. That's me. The film follows J. Robert Oppenheimer during his time with the Manhattan Project, the United States military program to build an atomic bomb during World War II.
We've got one hope. All America's industrial might and scientific innovation connected here. A secret laboratory. Keep everyone there until it's done.
He led the secretive Project Y at Los Alamos, New Mexico. That's where preeminent scientists and their families lived and worked while developing the world's first nuclear weapons. But the film left out a lot of things, and on today's show, we're going to talk about the human and environmental costs the movie doesn't show, and the people and places deemed expendable. First, we go to the so-called birthplace of the atomic bomb. The nuclear industrial complex